Good morning. I'm here by the greatness and grace of God and the knowledge that he gives to people to come up with products like Z-Pak and steroids. Hey, somebody got that knowledge and it didn't come from their own brains. It came from the grace of God who gave them greatness to do it. And I don't know how long my voice will hold, to be very honest with you. But I'm not regretting. I got this from a three-year-old. We had a three-year-old stay with us for a couple of days, our granddaughter. And she was tested for everything, and it's just a cough. And I've been tested for COVID and flu and strep and... that's not what it is, but it was sinking into my lungs, and I have a bad history of bronchial and pneumonia history. And I found out you get the pneumonia vaccine, and it doesn't cover all levels of pneumonia. So, but that's not an excuse to not get it. If you've got lung issues, go ahead and get it. But I'm here, and I'm thankful for this opportunity to be here. Jesus said in Luke 9 and 23, if any of you desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. The very essence of that statement seems to indicate that there's going to be a degree of self-denial or discipline in our lives in order to follow him. Paul writes a similar statement in 1 Corinthians, the 9th chapter, beginning with the 24th verse, where he says, do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may obtain it. And everyone who competes for the prize is temperate in all things. Now, they do it to obtain a perishable crown, but we for an imperishable crown. Therefore I run, thus not with uncertainty, thus I fight, not as one who beats the air, but I discipline my body to bring it into subjection, lest when I have preached to others, I myself should become disqualified. This gives us an indication of two things. He uses the term of temperate and discipline. And that's really what self-discipline is all about. Self-discipline is necessary for a successful Christian life. Part of the problem is we may not have a good handle on our own self-discovery. And that we need to do. A.W. Tozer, and I understand we're dealing with a man's thoughts, but sometimes he's got some outstanding thoughts. He says, for us to have self-discovery, to find out where we need to be, one, we need to determine what do we want most? We'll stop there. I don't know. Well, I don't care what you think about LeBron James. I don't really care that much about him, favorable or unfavorable. But the man's 38 years old, and he plays a game that is best played by 24-year-olds. His body is in excellent condition. He spends an estimated $1.8 million on diet and physical care to make certain his body will be able to perform. Why? Because he has the goal, and who knows exactly what it is, whether it's to win championships, or whether it's to attain the highest records. Whatever it is, he's willing to spend That kind of effort to obtain his goal. What do we want most? What do we think about the most? How do we use our money? What do we do with our leisure time? Who is the company we like to, we enjoy being with? Who and what do we admire the most? What do we laugh at? These are all items to self-discovery. And once you find self-discovery, then you will be able to move along to what's necessary to attain your objective. Many times, you have probably made resolutions and it fell by the wayside. And you wondered why you weren't more disciplined. I've done that many times, you have in many occasions. Well, let's first acknowledge that we are complex and that we are human beings. There are a number of factors that play into our ability to self-discipline. Our genetics, our conditioning, our past traumas, various kinds of mental issues, and struggles all have an impact on our ability to discipline ourselves. And yet it is required. Everyone to whom much is given, much will be required. This gives us a clear indication that we don't have to look at somebody else and say, they do this, why can't I? You look at yourself and decide what you are capable of doing and move in that direction. We sometimes say, I just don't have the willpower. And that's not really the case. It's factors that you break down. Solomon gives us this statement. He said, it's great to have power. It's great to have control. But if you can't control yourself, it's not worth much. It's essentially what he says in Proverbs 16 and 32. The exact quotation is, he is slow to anger is better than the mighty. He who rules his spirit than he who takes a city. What that means is, if you have power over your spirit, you're greater than a conqueror may be. So, really, what is self-discipline? It depends on where you're at. If you're a child, discipline means maybe spankings. And too often, that's the only connotation we have. If you're a soldier, discipline means you have to adhere to a certain standard. Or you may have KP duty or other less desirable events to happen. As a student, it may be that you look at and decide that a teacher is putting too much pressure upon you. I've got one in here. I've got one in there. Thank you. I've got one there. I tell you what, Mucinex doesn't always do that great either. I'm so loaded with stuff, I'm telling you. Oh, goodness. self-discipline. I can't control that physical, can I? There's not much we can do. I talked to John a couple of years ago. I had COVID, and you know, you cough so much, and you look and you say, "I don't have a six pack here." You know, it just doesn't happen, does it? And then I was at that point. That's why I went to the doctor to give me stuff. You know, it will work. Thank you, dear brother. But self-discipline really doesn't have a punishment context to it. And too often we think of that. Even in the church, we think church discipline means exclusion of those who are walking astray. And that's not really it. If you look up the definition of discipline, the first definition by Webster is training. So, let's give an example. If you take your dog out for a walk, you hold him on a leash. He doesn't dash after the squirrel as he wants. He doesn't wander as he wants. He's disciplined, but he's not self-disciplined, is he? And that's the thing that we want as a Christian, is to be self-disciplined. It would be nice, I suppose, for some of us, if we had the elders, to put a leash on us. But the church might work a little better, who knows? But, you see, God gave us free wills. And so the elders have to give you free will too. You have to learn to exercise that. If you have a trouble with speeding, and I know it's one of those Facebook things, have you ever gotten a speeding ticket? Somebody put lots of dots after it. You can ask your mechanic to put a controller or a governor on your accelerator and take care of it. But again, it's got to come from within. So self-control is extremely important. Paul writes this in Galatians 5:22-23 about self-control. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Peter does the same thing. Add to your virtue, add to your faith, virtue, knowledge. Knowledge, self-control. 2 Peter 1, 5, and 6. It's a progressive thing, and I hope you notice that. Self-control is not something that you happen in one day. It's a progressive situation. You build it day by day. You want to run a mini marathon or a marathon, you don't start out by running 13 or 26 miles. You might run a block. You might walk a block. But eventually you build to where you're going to be, and that's the key to all of this, is you build. It takes a lot more character to have self-discipline to do something on your own than it does to be told what to do, when to do it, and how to do it. Many, many years ago, we were working summertime, and a co-worker saw another individual that he'd gone to school with. And he just asked a question, "When did you get out?" And his friend had been in prison. And he said, "About a month." He says, "I don't like it out here. I'm going back." And he did. He violated parole. He committed another crime. He went back. And what he liked was being told where to be, when to be, what to do, and how to do it. He couldn't adapt to making all of those decisions himself. And that's a strange thing. But we as Christians need to have character to do what we should, when we should, without being told those things, with one exception. The one exception is to take the guidance solely from our Creator, which enhances His Son and the Spirit in all of that. We need self-discipline in every aspect of Christian lives. Even the Apostle Paul was very much concerned about disciplining his own life. In the passage that was read at the beginning of our worship, Paul says, "Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but one receives the prize?" And that's always unique, isn't it? That people run and one person gets a prize. Now, we've expanded it where people get, in increments, various awards. Second place, third place, and so on. And if it's a team sport, it's track, you get descending amounts of points awarded for your finish. But by and large, it's the one who gets it. There's going to be one NBA team that's going to be the champion. There's going to be one NFL team that's going to be the champion. There's going to be one Major League team that's going to be the champion. One NCAA champion in basketball. I'm not sure we've achieved that in NCAA football yet, but there's plenty of room for argument on that. Doesn't really matter, does it? It all comes down to, that's all we ever remember, is the winner. Anybody tell me who was the second place finisher in the 1965 World Series? Better than that, can anybody tell me who was playing in the 65 World Series? Interestingly, it was Minnesota and Los Angeles. Los Angeles won. Who cares? But the greater part of this is, we all run a race where all of us can be the winner. We all can. And we'll all be known as He is known in that stage. And so that's a wonderful thing to think of, that we'll be in an equation with Christ Almighty. Now, they do this for a corruptible crown, but we do it for an imperishable crown. I think that's a wonderful thing to start out with, is to think about this. Understand Corinthians, knew that every athlete who participated in the race, that in at least Corinth, the winner only got a pine wreath. Think about that. A pine wreath. How long will that last? Will it even last till the next race? And yet, they would train for months on end for that one event. They denied themselves some of the pleasures of this life in order to attain that crown. And don't we hold that up as admirable in a host of different athletic events in our world today? We glorify that. We spend our money on it. We fill our heads with trivia, and I don't know how I get rid of some of my trivia in my head. So that just sits in there. It's all around us. It's important to us. It's a billion upon billions of dollars spent. And it's only enhanced with the gambling that's gone on in our land. It has become one of the major industries of our nation. Isn't that a sad thing? It doesn't produce anything. It doesn't enhance your personal lives. It doesn't put food on your table. And yet it's very important. But we look at those people who deny themselves in order to achieve a passing glory. Shouldn't we devote an equal amount of time? I suppose it really comes down to this, and it comes to that first thought of self-discovery. What is most important in our life? And I presume almost everyone has asked themselves, perhaps younger people more so than older people. And yet older people ought to be continually asking it. Why am I here? What purpose am I on this earth? And these are deep thoughts to think about. They aren't just passing things. It helps us obtain what's important in our life and where we're going. Solomon once said, if you faint in the day of adversity, your strength is small. Proverbs 24:10. In other words, once we set our course, stay with it. Stay with it. I know that there are some of you who are runners. Ever had a runner's stitch? Know what I mean? Anybody know what a runner's stitch is? You get running along, and all of a sudden it feels like something's on him or on his side and just cutting away. What do you do about it? Huh?
Keep running.
Run through it. You run through it. We understand a lot of those things in a physical sense. We just go through it. And that's exactly what Paul is saying, or Solomon is saying. If you faint in the day of adversity, your strength is small. Now, certainly that is a criticism, but it's also an encouragement to realize that the Almighty knows the difficulty of your moment. And just go through it. So, why is it that we need to be disciplined? Another quotation of a modern person, Max Anders, said, only the disciplined ever get really good at anything. Think about that. Everything in life requires some sort of discipline. Whether it's hitting a baseball, climbing a mountain, playing a musical instrument, or making good grades. It comes down to a matter of discipline. I have two sons. Both played trumpet. The older son, truthfully, played wonderfully well. He got good tone out of his horn. Didn't care. Didn't work at it. sat third or fourth chair always in high school. His little brother, not so good. But he worked at it. He labored at it. He always sat first chair. Didn't quite when he got to IU. You're kind of in the major leagues of music schools. But he sat high. He worked hard. It was just a matter of discipline. And the curious thing is, a lot of times in those situations, the one who didn't work the hardest sometimes resents those who do work hard. And you may face that as a Christian. You may say, I don't know how that person knows this or knows that. Well, it's because they worked at it. They simply worked at it. Christian life is just like that. Church is filled with people who would love to be mature Christians with tremendous knowledge of God's Word, but they're not willing to pay the price to achieve it. One Christian said to another, I'd give my life to know the Bible like you do. And the other Christian said, that's what it took. That's what it took. And that is an interesting thing. You don't live in the day of the Holy Spirit falling upon you and giving you all knowledge. And yet he did. All things that pertain to life. And I want to emphasize that. To life. You have questions about your business. You have questions about your neighbors. You have questions about raising children. You have questions about spouses. You have questions about dating. It's here. Life. And godliness. We don't need the creeds. We've got this. I was once filling out paperwork for a church that was trying to get a tax exempt. And they said, what's your creed? I put down the Bible. And they said, we need a copy. I said, okay. They didn't think I was funny. I wasn't. That's the truth. There it is. It takes a life. I think we often get intimidated because we really know that this is the key to it all. There are numerous Bible reading programs that you can get, and they're good. Utilize any of them. I've got a 3-year plan. If you want to, get a hold of me. I'll get you that 3-year plan. It takes 3 years to go through the whole thing. You say, why? Because it works. It works. It gives you depth. By the way, it begins with 1 John. Read 1 John every day, completely, through for 7 days. You say, why? You get the essence of Christ in that. It's great for a beginner. Great for a beginning. But it takes a lifetime. John Wesley, in his later writings, and all of his writings, indicated that he averaged traveling about 20 miles a day for 40 years. Think about that. Traveled in his time. He was up every morning at 4 o'clock. He knew 10 languages. At age 83, he was annoyed because he couldn't write more than 15 hours a day. I'm 73, and I'll tell you what, I don't know how he does that. At age 86, he was complaining because he was sleeping until 5:30. It's a lifetime work. I'm not suggesting that we all adopt that kind of a thing. We need to train our minds to think. Well, you can say, I already think. But do you raise questions? Do you search for the answers? Or do you simply listen to what somebody has to say about it? And there becomes the real gist of growing up. You need to ask the questions and search. Paul put it this way, be diligent to present yourself approved to God, a worker who does not need to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. King James says, study. And that study means literally work hard. Diligent means the same thing, work hard. I'm curious as to the thought train of translators and translating it from study to diligent and avoiding work hard. Did Christ ever back away from telling us that the journey we were on would be difficult? For broad is the way, and narrow is the way, difficult is the way. Not because of anything he does, but our adversary makes it difficult. So we need to work at this continually. Believe it or not, to be a good Christian and I'm reluctant to say this because when I started preaching, I weighed 158 pounds. I'm not 158 pounds. I used to blame it on all the wonderful cooks in the church. But when it really comes down to it is, I could say, no, I don't like that, or I don't want that peach cobbler. And I don't want to disappoint you and say that that I'm rejecting your food. But we need to discipline our bodies. Paul says bodily exercise profits a little, and that's true, it does. But we have to have our bodies to serve Him. I think we learned something out of COVID. And one of the reasons I was really reluctant to be around many of you is because I wanted assurances from my doctor that I might not infect you. And she seems to say, you're okay. So if you get whatever it is I've got, blame her. There you go, Elijah. We'll blame something else. But we do need to take care of ourselves, be concerned for the physical well-being of others, so that we can all be a unit working for the Lord. We found ways to serve the Lord through COVID. But it's so much better here when we are all assembled together to be able to serve. I've only been here once in this building. We had a singing a number of years ago on a Sunday afternoon. And Brad and Nancy Rankin and I came over for it, and the acoustics here are just beautiful in this building. I don't know who designed it, but they did a wonderful job in that. You can't hear that blessings in a Zoom, can you? It's just not there. But we had it. We have it all together. Take care of yourselves so that we can be bonded together. We need to discipline ourselves in our moral characters. Bodily discipline profits a little. But the disciplined mind, morally, is of great importance. Let's suppose a man determines to become a doctor. It takes years to become a doctor, long hours of study. And he finally sets up his practice, but he indulges in drink and immorality, and it costs him his reputation, his business. There was an episode on young Sheldon where Sheldon went to the doctor, and the doctor was smoking. And he says, "Why should I listen to you?" And that's a good question. You know, if we're morally bankrupt, why should anybody listen to us? We need to discipline ourselves morally. Be careful, little eyes, what you see. Be careful, little ears, what you hear. Be careful, little tongue, what you say. And we need to do that. We do need to discipline our gluttony. And that's not just food. Gluttony in a lot of things. An old brother who's not with us anymore was a preacher in Indiana. Didn't travel much. Part of his life he was a postman. And out of being a postman, he developed a desire to collect stamps. And his wife would always look at him with his stamps and setting them up and putting in them proper place and always looking for another stamp to get. He had more stamps than he could probably ever sell, but he was always looking for that one, and she would say, "Lay up treasures in heaven where neither rust nor moth destroy." And you got stamps. Moths can get them. Mildew can get them. And the trash got them. Because when he died, no one was interested in them. But he always wanted that one more stamp. And I think we can take a lesson from that. That's a gluttony of sort. We need to control those things. It's all right to have hobbies and things that interest us. I have to control some of my own gluttony on various things. I spent years in the late 15th century and 16th century in reading. And then I got reading a number of things about the Lewis and Clark trip, and good old brother Rick Sparks sent me a book on that, and I thought, well, I don't know that I need that, but I better read it. He sent it, I read it, and you see, he understood that I have an insatiable desire to read things, and I've got to control that because I can get off on tangents. By the way, what I got off on the tangent in the 15th and 16th century was dealing with the Bible and the overall plan that Queen Isabella had to restore the Pope. That was what she was all about, to restore the power of the Pope. And her machinations to achieve that were incredible. And it was a web that spread throughout all of Europe. It unraveled. Her best plans all unraveled. And the only explanation I have is that God did not want to allow that to happen. But we need to control our appetites, not just our food, but all other gluttony. We need to discipline our speech. My wife's great-grandfather was raised in the church, departed the church, and then came back. In the process, he had picked up a lot of habits. I think he smoked. I know he drank. And he said all of those were easy to conquer. He just made the decision. He came back to the Lord, and he did it. But the one thing that he had difficulty with was speech. He picked up a bad habit of foul language. Now, I suppose in modern world it wasn't very foul at all, but in the 1940s it was nasty. And he struggled with that. His own process in trying to control that sometimes required him to bite his tongue, literally. Bite it, and sometimes caused it to bleed. But it stopped. It stopped. Speech is a difficult thing for us to gain control. James writes this: if anyone among you thinks he's religious and does not bridle his tongue, he deceives his heart. This one's religion is useless. For we all stumble, James would say, in many things. If anyone does not stumble in word, he's a perfect man, also able to bridle the whole body. Sometimes this may be the clue to achieving greatness in other areas of self-discipline. Control your speech. Perhaps it's why grandmothers and mothers of times long ago would say, if you can't say something nice about someone, don't say anything. It's a good way to learn bridling of your tongue and gaining that self-discipline. Finally, we need to make certain that we are, in fact, following all of the rules of God. You may set up rules to help guide you. Whether you say, I'm going to get up and have prayer the first thing in the morning and dedicate a few moments for reading. But we need to make certain that we're following God's rules, not our own, as the guidance. That has been the problem with the division of the body of Christ. In the second chapter of Colossians, Paul writes this. Criticizes them. Don't touch this. Don't taste that. Don't handle this. Thinking that those rules would make them right with God. Now, those rules might work for you and be necessary for you, but if they're not given by God, don't impose it on anybody else, and there becomes the upshot. You become pharisaical in that.
We get a joyous view of the Pharisees. They were dedicated to serving the Lord, but in their way. Christ even acknowledged in the 23rd chapter of Matthew, the Pharisees and the scribes sit in the seat of Moses, do what they say, just don't do what they do. So avoid those kind of things. Just do what God says. We also need to be careful that when we discipline ourselves, it doesn't fill us with pride. I don't do that. I see them doing that. I don't do that. There is satisfaction in self-control. But self-control doesn't give us the category of the Pharisee in Luke 18. Father, I thank you that I'm not as other men. There's the careful thing that we need to do. Finally, I suppose, another thought is, don't impose too harsh of discipline on yourself. Stoics enjoyed disposing of all things pleasurable. And the whole point was a mind over matter situation. Every time I get sick, I think of my grandmother who said, if you think it, you can overcome it. Well, thank you, ma'am. Well, it doesn't work. But I appreciate her determination. Don't impose too strict of things. God did give us many things for pleasure here. Enjoy them. Those pleasures are only a foreshadowing of the goal that we have. Frankly, it's difficult for any one of us to fully envision heaven. Why? Because all the former things have passed away. There will be no more sorrow, no more sickness, no more pain, no suffering, and no death. We are familiar with all of those from the moment we're born. And it surrounds us all the time. And so it's difficult for us to fully grasp the greatness of heaven. It's wonderful when we feel moments of the presence of God in our lives. But there we will be with Him. And forevermore. And that is the great quest. All of us run in this race. And all of us can achieve the end. We certainly hope that you will decide that the success of this depends greatly upon, one, whether you find who you are, whether you're willing to make that goal of heaven your sole source of the end gain. And are you willing then to subject yourself to what's necessary to obtain that end? It's all possible simply because the one who loves you most gave life for you. and is willing to give you life everlasting.